Well, I moved to Maryland July 2008, and I brought with me the first and the only real winter coat that I had ever owned to that point. It's one that I had purchased to go to that great northern seminary in Atlanta, Georgia. If you don't know, I'm a Floridian. And when I got here, you all gave me what I now consider some bad advice on how to prepare for Maryland winters. Some of you assured me that Maryland winters were mild, and others of you promised that there would be no need for a backup generator, no need for massive bags of salt. And the first winter that I was here, we received 9 inches of snow. No big deal, right? I mean, it was a big deal to me, but it was not a big deal to you all. And my first winter coat, well, it fared pretty well, and spring came relatively quickly, and I began to trust you all. And that's where I went wrong. So it would come as no surprise to you that the next winter, the winter of 2009 to 2010, caught me completely off guard. That winter, we received not 9 inches of snow, not 20 inches, not 40, not 60, but 77 inches of snow. There's a picture. That's me. And that's my car somewhere under there. And I'm wearing, something in me when the garage sale came that October told me to get a little bit of a better jacket. So that's my first garage sale jacket. It still wasn't great, though. I just didn't know any better. So that was the most snow that has been recorded in our area since 1883, when NOAA began to keep records. I had no salt. I had no shovel. I had no down coat. And so I shoveled my car with a dustpan and a stainless steel mixing bowl. There's one more picture, Roger. This is the walls of snow around the church parking lot. Some of you might remember it. You can see the van parked in the back there is still shorter than the wall of snow that encircled the church. And I remember that that didn't fully begin to melt away until at least April that year, if I'm correct. Winter that year dragged on, and everything seemed frozen for months and months. It's starting to bring back memories for you, too, I'm sure. Everything was covered under this heavy blanket of snow, under several feet of ice, and it was cold. And that winter, I found myself, as the Floridian, wondering if anything could survive under all of that ice and all of that snow. Could anything survive after being buried for so long, after being buried for months? And would any life actually make it to spring, especially me? It's a question that I have found myself asking every winter in Maryland since. But it's also a more serious question that I found myself asking just within the past few weeks and the past few months. Can anything survive in our seemingly cold and dark world? As we prepare for worship this week, early in the week, the news hit that another 14 people had lost their lives as an act of violence and a mass shooting, this one being heavily investigated as an act of terrorism, as we've been reminded in our prayer time. This tragedy in California marked the 355th mass shooting in the United States in 2015 alone. That's nearly one mass shooting per day where four or more people are injured or killed. And as I started writing this sermon on Wednesday afternoon, hundreds of people, most of them teenagers actually, gathered in our fellowship hall for the funeral reception for 16-year-old Ellie, a junior at Severna Park High School, who we've also remembered in prayer this morning, who lost her life to suicide last Sunday afternoon. And the grief in this place was palpable, and it was heavy. Friends, we are not alone in wondering, is love alive? Will the coldness and the darkness that surrounds our world ever break? Can things grow beneath the winter snow? As the song that we heard in worship last week asked, the one that we've been putting in conversation with our Advent scriptures this season. As I've been turning these questions over in my mind and reading the scriptures for this morning and praying on them, it struck me that these are not new questions. Our biblical ancestors asked them long ago. You might remember the context around Isaiah 11, the text that we heard read last. The Israelites, they're suffering from this devastating exile from years of war, and they believe that the line of David, you know, the stump of Jesse, Jesse was David's father, was dead. And that God had promised to bring a Messiah out of the line of David, but that line seemed cut off and over. And similarly, there's this great story that we've paired this morning from the Gospel of Luke, and it's about Mary and Elizabeth. Specifically, though, the piece I want to focus on is the story of Elizabeth and Zechariah, where they're about to give up hope of having a child. The scripture says that she was barren and that they were getting on in years. And so they weren't sure if new life would ever come to their family. So when I look at these texts, I realize that the questions that we're asking, is love alive and can new life come out of that which seems dead? These are ancient questions, but they're also contemporary questions. But they're also questions that the scriptures answer very clearly. Isaiah 11 says, a shoot shall come up out of that dead stump. A new life will come. And then it paints this vision of a king coming and ruling with righteousness and wisdom. That family tree which they thought was decimated as they were in exile and facing so much violence, they see just a little bit of new life all of a sudden springing forth. And at our core, at our very core as Christians, we believe that yes, new life can come out of that which is dead, that love is alive, that things can survive this cold world. We hear the echoes of that yes in the New Testament and the Old Testament. You probably have your own scriptures that you turn to for this, but I always go to the vision of Ezekiel as he looks over this valley of dry bones, and God says, I will bring new life to these dry bones. And then I usually go to the story, I love the story of Elizabeth that we've just talked about in Zechariah, where they find out that they will have a child and that their family will continue after years of infertility and strife. And then, of course, we cannot forget the stories of Jesus, the one who raises people from the dead, literally, figuratively, the one who brought healing and hope and new life to his disciples, and the one who was the greatest example of this life coming out of death in his resurrection. So as Christians, we believe that absolutely, yes, love is alive, and that things can grow beneath the winter snow. The cold and the dead can come back to life. But then as I was thinking about this sermon, I realized that we're still in this awkward time, are we not? And we bump up against that over and over again in Advent. The awkwardness of Advent is that we hear these scriptures and we look around and the picture of our real life doesn't add up to the text. Let me give you an example. From Isaiah 11, you heard the beautiful vision of the peaceable kingdom, right? The wolf lies down with the lamb and the bear and the calf, they graze together. And the child plays near the den of the poisonous snake. And then you look around and you realize that is not our reality. This vision has not come to life. It hasn't happened yet. We know, and I know from watching reality TV, I'm really into Alaskan Survivor shows right now, that the wolf does not lie down with the lamb, and that the bear and the calf did not graze together or coexist. And that's because, friends, we live in the in-between time. You might have heard that phrase before during Advent. We live in between the time when Christ has come and Christ will come again. And the thing that makes Advent so awkward is that we are the people in the meantime. I know some of you have been frustrated, don't lie, for the fact that we don't put up all the Christmas decorations at once as soon as the first week of December comes around. We slowly let them seep into the sanctuary, and then maybe one week we turn the lights on, and the next week we'll put the banners up. And that frustrates some people. And Grady was extremely frustrated last night at our dinner table that we only lit one of the Advent candles, and we spent our entire dinner saying, one, tomorrow we'll light the second one. And he was just begging for more of the candles to be lit. And how many of you get ticked that we don't sing all Christmas music from the first week of December on? We've had that discussion before. But this is that awkwardness of Advent, because we're trying to recognize that we live in both realities. We're celebrating the birth of Jesus, but we're also looking forward to the day when Christ will come again. And that is not here yet, because not all is right with the world. Not all is well with our souls. We live in the in-between times as we wait for that vision of the peaceful kingdom to finally come to life. As we wait for the questions that we're asking to be answered for the last and final time. So the question is, and this is the question I've been reflecting on the most over the past couple of weeks, is what do we do in the meantime? And this is a question that I'll leave with you to take with you on your Advent journey too. How will you wait? What will you do in the meantime, in this in-between time? I think that we probably have a few options. We can sit around passively, wondering when and how and where Christ will come. We can follow that bit of Southern grandma advice that was all over bumper stickers when I grew up. Look busy, Jesus is coming, right? We can fill our lives and our calendars with things that help us look busy, activities, events, and opportunities, all for the sake of just looking full as we wait. But then perhaps I think that there is a third way of waiting, where we live not just twiddling our thumbs and not looking busy for the sake of being busy, but we live as people who have hope, even in the presence of the coldness and the darkness of the world, because we already know that God has answered those questions, that new life will come out of that which is dead. And yes, the evil will not have the final say. Yes, love is alive, even if at first we only see it as a tiny little shoot coming out of a dead stump. This week, as I was reminiscing about those 77 inches of snow, that winter which dragged on forever, that was cold and dark, I remembered that one Sunday morning, early in the morning, that as I crossed the little island garden out here from the parking lot into the church, that I noticed that breaking through the snow were these tiny purple flowers, and these little green shoots that a couple weeks later would become bright yellow daffodils. New life from beneath the winter snow. I leave you this morning with a poem that was written by Roddy Hamilton. And he writes, "The mystery begins where winter finds its feet. The rush of frost and chill competes with the cold old hope of incarnation. Darker nights unfold, and with the fading of the light, the sun weakens. Held by its frozen earth, wrapped in winter's frost, the mystery of the ancient hope is alive once more. And from the stump of Jesse, the dry old tree of David's line, comes a new branch, a new shoot, cracking through the season with a promise yet unfulfilled. This is the hoping, the waiting, the Advent. So let us gather around the words the prophet spoke long ago and believe. Emmanuel is on the way." Amen. Friends, now we gather around the table together. And I pray that you will experience the grace of God at table, and that these gifts from God will strengthen all of us and will give us strength for the season of waiting that is ahead.